What did you do today to lend a hand to a colleague? Respect. What did you do today to acknowledge the work of one of your colleagues? Learning. What's one mistake you made in the last week, and what did you learn from it? Continuous improvement. What have you done in the past week to improve so that you're better this week than last? Customer focus. What is one change that you made in the last week that came from a customer suggestion? Whatever your shared values are, come up with a routine set of questions that will get people to reflect on the shared values and what they have done each day to act on them. Seek feedback. How can you know that you're doing what you say, which is the behavioral definition of credibility, if you never ask for feedback about your behavior? How can you expect to match your words and your actions if you don't get information about how aligned others see them being? Asking for feedback gives you a perspective about yourself that only others can see. With this insight, you have the opportunity to make improvements. The feedback process strikes at a tension between two basic human needs, the need to learn and grow versus the need to be accepted just the way you are. Consequently, even what seems like a mild, gentle, or relatively harmless suggestion can leave a person feeling angry, anxious, poorly treated, or profoundly threatened. One major reason that most people, and especially those in leadership positions, aren't proactive in asking for feedback is their fear of feeling exposed. Exposed as not being perfect, as not knowing everything, as not being as good at leadership as they should be, as not being up to the task. There is simply no way to get around the fact that you can't grow as a leader without getting feedback. Researchers have found that people who seek out disconfirming feedback, contrary to their self-perceptions, perform better, in this case more likely to receive financial bonuses, than those who only listen to people who see their positive qualities. Being aware of your weaknesses and shortcomings, they say, whether you like it or not, is critical to improvement. Ed Beatty, general manager at Chorus New Zealand, is always on the lookout for feedback. There is no feedback that Ed won't listen to seriously, one of his direct reports told us. He doesn't want us to hold anything back, even and especially feedback about his personal performance. He wants to know what's going on, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everyone has the ability to approach him openly and candidly without fear of him getting angry or defensive. Bonnie Barger, Vice President, Order to Cash Strategy and Operations at Oracle, made a personal and public commitment to seek feedback and to ask other people how her decisions affected them. Their annual Credit and Collections Summit was a credibility moment for her and a turning point with her team, she said. It was a chance to demonstrate to them that I meant what I said. I kicked off the discussion by going over the new direction of the company's business model, why it was important to go through this transformation. I said that I didn't have all the answers, and I asked them for their help. It turned out to be a very good day, and although exhausting and at times tense, we all felt a great deal of relief to be able to talk openly with one another. Many came up to me afterward and thanked me for setting the tone. By opening up and asking for their feedback, we were able to achieve an understanding among the entire team that would otherwise have been impossible. Self-reflection, the willingness to seek feedback, and the ability to engage in new behaviors based on this information is predictive of future success in managerial jobs. You can't learn very much if you're unwilling to find out more about the impact of your behavior on the performance of those around you. It's your responsibility as a leader to keep asking others, "How am I doing?" If you don't ask, they're not likely to tell you. Dr. John C. Brocklebank, a senior vice president for SAS, found his team's feedback from the leadership practices inventory to be incredibly valuable. Appreciating that getting feedback can be uncomfortable for some people because it exposes vulnerabilities and, at the same time, realizing that a willingness to be vulnerable is what makes a leader authentic, John decided to share both what he learned and what he intended to do to become a better leader. In his blog, he described their feedback as leaving him humbled and enlightened, and asked them to continue giving him their views on his progress. He specifically thanked his team for this gift. A side benefit of making it easy for people to give you feedback is that you increase the likelihood that people will accept honest feedback from you. You must be sincere in your desire to improve yourself, and you must demonstrate that you are open to knowing how others see you. However, keep in mind that if you don't do anything with the feedback you receive, people will likely stop giving it to you. They're liable to believe that you are arrogant enough to think that you are smarter than everyone else is, or that you just don't care about what anyone else has to say. Either of these outcomes seriously undermines your credibility and effectiveness as a leader. Teach others to model the values. You're not the only role model in the organization. Everyone should be setting the example. Align words and deeds at all levels and in all situations. Your role is to make sure that your constituents are keeping the promises that you and they have agreed on. People are watching how you hold others accountable for living the shared values and how you reconcile deviations from the chosen path. They're paying attention to what others say and do, and so should you. It's not just what you do that demonstrates consistency between word and deed. Every team member, partner, and colleague is a sender of signals about what's valued. Therefore, you need to look for opportunities to teach not just by your example, but also by taking on the role of teacher and coach. For example, instead of handing off some customer accounts to a recent hire with very little tactical work instruction, Cheryl Chapman, Senior Customer Operations Manager at a global flash memory manufacturer, spent several hours daily with this person providing a comprehensive review of processes, actions, and rationales behind certain decisions. She encouraged the new employee to always be honest with the customer, even in difficult situations. When a quality issue led to product delivery issues that affected the customer's quarter-end financial targets, Cheryl guided the employee in having a candid conversation with the customer regarding root cause, corrective action, and next steps. Cheryl made sure that this new employee, along with others on the team, lived the same standards and values, especially in interactions with customers. For direct reports, there's a very strong correlation between how they rate their leaders' overall effectiveness and the frequency they report them spending time and energy making certain that people he or she works with adhere to the principles and standards we have agreed upon. The top 25% of leaders described by their direct reports as affirming shared values have favorable ratings on workplace attitudes like commitment, motivation, pride, and productivity, that are on average 115% higher than those leaders seen by their direct reports as least frequently engaged, bottom 25%, in this leadership behavior. Exemplary leaders know that people learn lessons from how people handle the unplanned as well as planned events on the schedule. They know that people learn from the stories that circulate in the hallways, in the break room, in the cafeteria, on the retail floor, and on social media. Exemplary leaders know that what gets measured and reinforced is what gets done. If you're going to create a high-performance culture, you need to pay attention to bringing on board people who share the values held dear. To show others what you expect and ensure that they hold themselves accountable, you need to confront critical incidents, tell stories, and make sure that organizational systems reinforce the behaviors you want them to repeat. Confront critical incidents. You can't plan everything about your day. Even the most disciplined leaders can't stop the intrusion of the unexpected. Stuff happens. Critical incidents, chance occurrences, particularly at a time of stress and challenge, are a natural part of the life of every leader. They offer, however, significant moments of learning for leaders and constituents. Critical incidents present opportunities for leaders to teach important lessons about appropriate norms of behavior. Sharada Ramakrishnan returned from a short vacation to take over as the team lead for a new project at Capgemini to find that one of the team members was planning to go on vacation during a critical week of the project. Her immediate reaction, she said, was to refuse the request point blank. Then she realized, as a leader, she needed to think not only about the project, but also to think about her team members. I knew that all of them were entitled to a vacation, especially when I had just taken one. However, a resource crunch meant that one less developer that week would impact their deliverables and timelines. Sharada decided to grant the request, even though she knew that it would require her to do additional developmental work that week. She understood that by doing this, she was setting an example of how the team could reach out and help each other during any crisis, and this incident completely changed the team's outlook about her. To illustrate the impact, she offered the following example. The individual going on vacation worked extra hours and transitioned to me the details before going on vacation. He also ensured that he was available to be on call for any clarifications I might have while handling his codes. The attitude of all the other team members started changing toward me as they realized I was doing what I said I would do. I stayed back with my team even when I was not needed around, took initiative, demonstrated my willingness to address their issues and help them achieve their goals. There are critical moments, such as the one Sharada faced, when leaders must clearly communicate what's crucial and what requires everyone's attention. This is precisely what Emily Singh experienced when working through the merger of two business teams at a consumer goods manufacturer. The teams were somewhat competitive, and Emily wasn't initially completely trusted. To turn this situation around, she started by setting a tone of continuous communication with everyone involved. She held frequent meetings, encouraging open discussions and making it safe for everyone to express their feelings about their work and the new team configuration. In building trust, she shared information and her own client experiences, soliciting feedback about others' experiences, both seeking and incorporating their advice about how to handle client allocations. As one of her direct reports explained, it would have been easy for her to play favorites, but she chose to do the right thing. Her words and actions were consistent, and eventually that trickled down and made everyone believe that we were in it together. Critical incidents are those events in leaders' lives that offer the chance to improvise while still staying true to the script. Although they can't be explicitly planned, it's useful to keep in mind, as Sharada and Emily did, that the way you handle these incidents, how you link actions and decisions to shared values, speaks volumes about what's important. Tell stories. Stories are a powerful tool for teaching people about what's important and what's not, what works and what doesn't, what is and what could be. Through stories, leaders pass on lessons about shared values, define culture, and get others to work together. Paul Smith, former director of consumer and communications research at Procter & Gamble, and author of Lead with a Story, explains why telling stories is so important for leaders. Because you can't just order people to be more creative or to get motivated or to start loving your job. The human brain doesn't work that way. But you can lead them there with a good story. You can't even successfully order people to follow rules because nobody reads the rule book. But people will read a good story about a guy who broke the rules and got fired, or a woman who followed the rules and got a raise. And that would be more effective than reading the rule book anyway. Management author Steve Denning learned firsthand how stories could change the course of an organization when he was the program director of knowledge management for the World Bank. After trying all the traditional ways of getting people to change their behavior, Steve found that simple stories were the most convincing way to communicate the essential messages within the organization. "Nothing else worked," Steve said. "Charts left listeners bemused. Prose remained unread. Dialogue was just too laborious and slow. Time after time, when faced with the task of persuading a group of managers or frontline staff in a large organization to get enthusiastic about a major change, I found that storytelling was the only thing that worked." In a business climate obsessed with PowerPoint presentations, complex graphs and charts, and lengthy reports, Storytelling may seem to some like a soft way of getting the hard stuff done. It's anything but that. The data supports Paul's and Steve's experience with storytelling. Research shows that when leaders want to communicate standards, stories are a much more powerful means of communication. People more quickly and accurately remember stories, more than they recall corporate policy statements, data about performance, and even a story plus the data. Storytelling has been a part of Philip Kane's life since he was a kid, and he carried over the family tradition into his business life. Early in his career, needing to find a way to connect personally with employees while at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, he started writing to his team every Friday. The letter, simply titled The Week, began as a recap of highlights from the prior week's work, but it soon transformed into a communication that was less about what we do than how we do it, which to me is as or more important, Philip explained. Now, as Chief Commercial Officer, Key Markets at Pirelli Industrial S.P.A., Philip uses stories to help bridge cultural and language divides by using common human experiences to bring people together. Storytelling, Philip believes, offers a framework for relating the message, something that people encounter in their lives that can be a bridge to the main point, and it offers him the chance to lead through an example rather than to come across simply as preaching. Telling stories, as Philip knows, has another lasting benefit. It forces you to pay close attention to what is going on around you. When you can write or tell a story about someone with whom your listeners can identify, they are much more likely to see themselves doing the same thing. People seldom tire of hearing stories about themselves and the people they know. These stories get repeated, and the lessons of the stories spread far and wide. Reinforce through systems and processes. Bert Wong, CEO of Japanese-American joint venture Fuji Xerox Singapore, realized that his team and company were too heavily reliant on him. "I was leading an orchestra of people who would merely follow my lead," Bert told us. "When I was physically present, the business would see growth, but when I was absent, business would correspondingly suffer. Initiatives would be followed through with excellent execution, but the starting point and the driving force would always stem from me." Bert began a multi-year process of creating a sustainable organization in which everyone shared in and operated by a common set of values. While many initially challenged his approach, Bert's persistence led to the creation of Fuji Xerox Singapore's four core values: fighting spirit, innovation and learning, collaborate to compete, and care and concern. Bert appreciated, however, that understanding these values and agreeing on them were only the first steps. The next challenge was making them a way of life, ensuring that the core values played a pivotal role in guiding the everyday decisions and actions of organization members. He knew that all the organizational processes and systems had to reinforce the values. For example, whenever they won a contract, Bert made sure he attributed the success to living the core values. He began talking about the values at every meeting. The company established an Inspirational Player of the Year Award, voted by peers, to give recognition to people who exemplify the FX Singapore core values. To reinforce the value of collaborate to compete, for example, different departments began to share similar key performance indicators, KPIs. Where previously the finance and sales departments would often clash, they unified the KPIs of both departments, reinforcing the value of collaboration and giving the finance department a stake in winning a contract. Fuji Xerox Singapore gradually began to see changes within the organization. With the core values reinforced in their daily work activities, people began to internalize the values in everything they did. What began as Bert's personal leadership journey eventually led to the institutionalization of a set of principles that guided everyone's decisions and actions. Lou Gerstner, credited with saving IBM after resuscitating, then reinvigorating, the nearly bankrupt company when he took over as chairman and CEO in 1993, was recently asked, "How important are values in sustaining companies?" Lou replied, I think values are really, really important, but I also think that too many values are just words. If you looked at the annual reports of 10 major companies, what's striking, he explained, is that almost all the values are the same. But when you go inside those companies, you often see that the words don't translate into practices. For example, a company may say teamwork is critical, but then individual performance drives pay levels, or service quality is said to be vital, but it is measured only annually. Lou explained, if the practices and processes inside a company don't drive the execution of values, then people don't get it. The question is, do you create a culture of behavior and action that really demonstrates those values and a reward system for those who adhere to them? All exemplary leaders understand that you have to reinforce the fundamental values that are essential to building and sustaining the kind of culture you want. Key performance measures and reward systems are among the many methods available to you. Recruitment, selection, onboarding, training, information, retention, and promotion systems are other meaningful ways to teach people how to enact values and how to align decisions with them. The norms and practices of your team and organization send signals about what is valued and what isn't, so they must be consistent with the shared values and standards that you're trying to teach. Take action. Set the example. One of the toughest parts of being a leader is that you're always on stage. People are always watching you, always talking about you, and always testing your credibility. That's why setting the right example is so important, and why it's essential to make use of all the tools you have available to do it. Leaders send signals in a variety of ways, and constituents read them as indicators of what's okay and what's not okay to do. How you spend your time is the single best indicator of what's important to you. Time is a precious asset because once passed, it is never recoverable. But if wisely invested, it can pay returns for years. The language you use and the questions you ask are other powerful ways to shape perceptions of what you value. You also need feedback to know if you're doing what you say or sending mixed messages. Be mindful that it's not only what you do that matters. You are measured also by how consistent your constituents' actions are with the shared values. So you must teach others how to set an example. Critical incidents, those chance occurrences in the lives of all organizations, offer significant teachable moments. They offer you the opportunity to pass along lessons in real time, not just in theory or the classroom. Critical incidents often become stories, and stories are among the most influential teaching tools you have. Remember that what you reinforce will be what receives the most attention. You have to keep score for people to know how they're doing and to improve how they're doing it. You also must reward the appropriate behavior if you expect people to repeat it. To model the way, you must set the example by aligning actions with shared values. This means you must, 1, keep your commitments and follow through on your promises. 2, make sure your calendar, your meetings, your interviews, your emails, and all the other ways you spend your time reflect what you say is important. 3, ask purposeful questions that keep people constantly focused on the values and priorities that are the most essential. 4, broadcast examples of exemplary behavior through vivid and memorable stories that illustrate how people are and should be behaving. 5, publicly ask for feedback from others about how your actions affect them. 6, make changes and adjustments based on the feedback you receive. Otherwise, people will stop bothering to provide it. Inspire a shared vision. Practice 2. Inspire a shared vision. Envision the future by imagining exciting and ennobling possibilities. Enlist others in a common vision by appealing to shared aspirations. Chapter 5. Envision the future. At a late-night meeting of OnFam's team, the mood was inspired. Dinner had just arrived, and everyone was cheerful. Team members were smiling and joking around. The energy level was high. It felt magical, An told us. He'd been envisioning this kind of moment for some time. This joyful scene is hard to imagine, given that only months before they had all been struggling. An was an engineering manager at Analog Devices, and the company had gone through a major organizational change. Under the new strategic initiative, several divisions dissolved, top management shuffled, and the satellite office where An's team was located suffered major cuts. Headcount was down 30%. Morale had taken a nosedive, and An found it increasingly difficult to get his team to focus on their job of product development. Productivity suffered as people started worrying more about their jobs and the team's direction than about the work at hand. An knew something needed to happen. He discerned that the team needed direction, but he didn't think that was his job. The new general manager, however, hadn't been very effective, in An's opinion, in addressing the team's low morale or articulating a clear vision for our future. Determined to correct the situation, An gave serious thought about a guiding strategy and vision for the team, and shared this in a meeting with his manager. His passionate plea made an impression, and at their next quarterly review, An took the podium to lay out the vision. An began by apologizing for the earlier lack of communication, particularly around layoffs. He explained why it had been necessary to divest certain lines of business, focus on their core competency, and apply their talents to solving their customers' most challenging problems. Then he shared his passionate message about what he saw for their collective future. We are a design powerhouse. Each and every one of us is here because we want to build the best converter, the fastest communication system, and the smartest automobile sensor. This is our chance to do just that. Imagine the day when the Apples, Ericssons, or Ciscos of the world would call us every time they dream of their next big thing. They would call us for our latest advanced technology and for our knack of solving their problems efficiently and elegantly. Look on our website today and you will see Analog Devices ahead of what's possible. This will not happen overnight, but it is our commitment, and we need everyone to make our vision a reality. We need your talent, we need your dedication, and above all, we need you to reach for your dreams and make them happen. My message scored a direct hit, he told us. Across the room, relief and excitement replaced the concerned faces. The tensed mood gave way to a relaxed and jovial atmosphere. Both An and the team knew that one speech wasn't going to change things overnight, but his message dealt directly with the current situation and appealed to the team members' competitive spirit and their common purpose of technical excellence. It garnered support from the team and senior management, just what they needed at the time. Call it what you will, vision, purpose, mission, legacy, dream, aspiration, calling, or personal agenda. The intent is the same. If you are going to be an exemplary leader, you have to be able to imagine a positive future, as An's story illustrates. When you envision the future that you want for yourself and others, and when you feel passionate about the legacy you want to leave, you are much more likely to take that first step forward. However, if you don't have the slightest clue about your hopes, dreams, and aspirations, then the chance that you'll take the lead is slim. In fact, you may not even see the opportunity that's right in front of you. Exemplary leaders are forward-looking, a quality constituents clearly expect of leaders. They envision the future and gaze across the horizon, seeing greater opportunities to come. They imagine that extraordinary feats are possible and that something noble can emerge from the ordinary. They develop an ideal and unique image of the future for the common good. But such a vision doesn't belong only to the leader. It has to be a shared vision. Everyone has hopes, dreams, and aspirations. Everyone wants tomorrow to be better than today. Shared visions attract more people, sustain higher levels of motivation, and withstand more challenges than those that are exclusive to only a few. You have to make sure that what you can see is also something that others can see. Leaders make a commitment to envision the future by mastering these two essentials. Imagine the possibilities. Find a common purpose. You begin with the end in mind by imagining what might be possible. Finding a common purpose inspires people to want to make that vision a reality. Imagine the possibilities. The human being is the only animal that thinks about the future, writes Daniel Gilbert, professor of psychology at Harvard University and known for his research on effective forecasting. The greatest achievement of the human brain is its ability to imagine objects and episodes that do not exist in the realm of the real, and it is this ability that allows us to think about the future. The human brain is an anticipation machine, and making future is the most important thing it does. Leaders are dreamers. Leaders are idealists. Leaders are possibility thinkers. All ventures, big or small, begin with the belief that what today is merely a yearning will one day be reality. It's this belief that also sustains leaders and their constituents through the difficult times. Turning exciting possibilities into an inspiring shared vision ranks near the top of the list of every leader's most important responsibilities. When we ask people to tell us where their visions come from, they often have great difficulty describing the process. When they do provide an answer, it's typically more about a feeling, a sense, or a gut instinct. There's often no explicit logic to it. They just feel strongly about something, and that intuitive sense must be fully explored. Envisioning and intuiting aren't logical activities, and they're extremely difficult to explain and quantify. Alden M. Hayashi, a former senior editor at Harvard Business Review who has studied executive decision-making, reports, "In my interviews with top executives known for their shrewd business instincts, none could articulate precisely how they routinely made important decisions that defied any logical analysis. To describe that vague feeling of knowing something without knowing exactly how or why, they used words like professional judgment, intuition, gut instinct, inner voice, and hunch, but they couldn't describe the process much beyond that." Yet, the leaders he studied agreed that these hard-to-describe abilities were crucial to effectiveness. They even went so far as to say that it was the X factor separating the best from the mediocre. In fact, intuition and vision, by definition, connect directly. Intuition has, as its root, the Latin word meaning to look at. Visions are projections of one's fundamental beliefs and assumptions about human nature, technology, economics, science, politics, art, ethics, and the like. A vision of the future is much like a literary or musical theme. It's the paramount, persistent, and pervasive message that you want to convey, the frequently recurring melody that you want people to remember. And whenever repeated, it reminds the audience of the entire work. Every leader needs a theme, an orienting principle around which he or she can organize an entire movement. What's your central message? What's your recurring theme? What do you most want people to envision every time they think about the future? Ask people if their leader paints the big picture of what we aspire to accomplish. Ask them how frequently their leader describes a compelling image of what your future could be like. What you will discover is that those leaders who engage the most in these behaviors have direct reports with the highest positive workplace attitude scores. For example, 73% of those who report to leaders in the top 10% on these two leadership behaviors strongly agree that they would work harder and for longer hours if the job demanded it, compared with only 15% of those who report to leaders in the bottom 10%. Less than 8% of the direct reports of the leaders in the bottom 10% strongly agree with the statement, "People who are part of this person's work group feel like they are making a difference in the organization." Responses to the question of how strongly direct reports agree or disagree that, overall, my supervisor is an effective leader, provide undeniable proof that being clear about the future is essential. Only 6% of those who rate their leaders in the bottom 10% on providing clarity about the future strongly feel that their leader is effective. However, direct reports who rate their leaders in the top 10% on this dimension are more than 13 times more likely to also rate their leaders as effective. The findings are similar to the question of how frequently does your leader paint the big picture and describe a compelling image of what the future could be. Direct reports provide effectiveness ratings nearly 1.6 times higher for those leaders in the top 10% on this variable compared with their counterparts in the bottom 10%. The key message from these findings, every leader must learn to communicate a vision of his or her larger purpose. Being able to envision the future is decidedly important and has a tremendous impact on people's motivational levels and workplace productivity. For many leaders, however, compelling images of the future don't come easily at first. Fortunately, there are ways you can heighten your capacity to imagine exciting possibilities and discover the central theme for your life and potentially the lives of others. Breakthroughs come when you reflect on your past, attend to the present, prospect the future, and express your passion. Reflect on your past. As contradictory as it might seem, in aiming for the future, you first need to look back into your past. Looking backward before you stare straight ahead enables you to see further into the future. Understanding the past can help you identify themes, patterns, and beliefs that both underscore why you care about certain ideals and explain why realizing those aspirations is such a high priority for you. This was precisely the lesson realized by Jade Louis, consultant at the time with an Australian recruitment firm, who told us, "In order to look into the future, I first needed to search my past for recurring lifelong themes. This gives me clarity on identifying the big picture, but also understanding current trends." In a similar vein, read history is the best advice Bob Rodriguez, managing director and CEO of the $17 billion value investing firm First Pacific Advisors, says he ever got about the one thing he could do to be the best possible investment professional. "And so I became a good historian," he says, reading both economic and financial history as well as general history. Your personal history is your traveling partner on every journey you take. It provides valuable guidance and informs the choices you must make. As historians John Seaman and George David Smith, partners at the Winthrop Group, say, "The job of leaders, most would agree, is to inspire collective efforts and devise smart strategies for the future. History can be profitably employed on both fronts." To lead with a sense of history, they maintain, is not being a slave to the past, but to recognize that there are invaluable lessons to be learned by asking, how did we get to the point we are today? Michael Watkins, vice president of the California Institute of Technology and noted scholar on accelerating transitions, says that without this perspective, you risk tearing down fences without knowing why they were put up. Armed with insight into the history, you may indeed find the fence is not needed and must go, or you may find there is a good reason to leave it where it is. When you gaze first into your past, you realize how full your life has been, and you become more aware of all the possibilities that could lie ahead. Looking back enables you to understand better that the central recurring theme in your life has been there for a long time. Another benefit to looking back before looking ahead is that you gain a greater appreciation for how long it can take to fulfill aspirations. None of this is to say that the past is your future. That would be like driving while looking only in your rearview mirror. It's just that when you look deeply into your entire life's history, you understand things about yourself and your world that you cannot fully comprehend by looking at the future as a blank slate. It's difficult, if not impossible, to imagine going to a place you've never experienced, either actually or vicariously. Taking a journey into your past before exploring your future makes the trip much more meaningful. Attend to the present. The daily pressures, the pace of change, the complexity of problems, and the turbulence in global markets can often hold your mind hostage and make you think that you have neither the time nor the energy to be future-oriented. But attending to the future doesn't mean you have to ignore what is going on in the present. It does, however, mean you have to be more mindful about it. Being mindful of others and your environment is vital, and a growing number of leaders and organizations trust in the power of mindfulness. You have to get off automatic pilot, believing that you know everything you need to know, viewing the world through pre-established categories, and not noticing what's going on around you. To increase your ability to conceive of new and creative solutions to today's problems, you have to be present in the present. You have to stop, look, and listen. As one of IBM's senior development managers, Amit Tolmer, says he has learned that to be able to envision the future, you have to understand the present. You have to listen to your team and feel their pain. Only when you understand the current challenges will you be able to imagine a better tomorrow. Set aside some time each day to stop doing stuff. Create some white space on your calendar. Remind yourself that your electronic devices have an off switch. Stop being in motion. Then start noticing more of what's going on around you right now. In Leading the Revolution, Gary Hamel, one of the world's most influential business thinkers, observed that many people don't appreciate and comprehend what's changing around them because they're down at ground level, lost in the thicket of confusing, conflicting data. He says, you have to make time to step back and ask yourself, what's the big story that cuts across all these little facts? Look around your workplace and community. What are people doing they didn't do a few years ago? What are people wearing, using, and discarding? How are people interacting? How do workplaces and communities look and feel different now compared to how they once did? What are the current trends popular these days? Why? Listen to your constituents. What are their hot topics of conversation? What are they saying they need and want? What are they saying that gets in the way of them doing their best? What do they think should be changed? Listen as well to the weak signals, to what's not being said. Listen for things you've never heard before. What does all this tell you about where things are going? What's it telling you about what lies just around the corner? When promoted to product manager at Labo America, Gautam Agarwal realized that in order to see into the future, he needed to attend to the present. To develop a clear vision of what kind of group we needed to be and how we would go about achieving our goals, Gautam explained, I understood that a leader's vision for the future has to be supported with facts about both the past and present. One of the first things he did was to hold an open forum where everyone had the opportunity of providing feedback on what we had been doing right and what needed both immediate as well as long-term improvement. He wanted to learn about how they perceived the product line's presence in the market at the time and where they saw it 3 to 5 years in the future because, as he acutely surmised, we would all have to be on the same page about where we were today before we could go to any place in the future. These discussions provided Gautam and his colleagues with a realistic assessment of current conditions, strengths, and challenges, while also helping them identify and make choices about which of the many promising paths forward they should pursue. To be able to envision the future, you have to realize what's already going on. You have to spot the trends and patterns and appreciate both the whole and the parts. You have to be able to see the forest and the trees. Imagine the future as a jigsaw puzzle. You see the pieces and you begin to figure out how they fit together, one by one, into a whole. Similarly, with your vision, you need to rummage through the bits and bytes of data that accumulate daily and notice how they fit together into a picture of what's ahead. Envisioning the future is not about gazing into a fortune teller's crystal ball. It's about paying attention to the little things that are going on all around you and being able to recognize patterns that point to the future. Prospect the future. Even as you stop, look, and listen to messages in the present, you also need to raise your head and gaze out toward the horizon. Leaders have to be on the lookout for emerging developments in technology, demographics, economics, politics, arts, popular culture, and all aspects of life inside and outside the organization. They have to anticipate what might be coming just over the hill and around the corner. They have to prospect the future. Dan Schwab, as Training and Organizational Development Director with the Trust for Public Land, encouraged thinking about the future by asking people at new hire orientation, where do you want to see this organization 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Dan believed that the greatest gift you can give to other people is thinking bigger than they believe. He was, as many leaders we interviewed told us, my organization's futures department. Leadership requires you to spend considerable time reading, thinking, and talking about the long-term view, not only for your specific organization, but also for the environments in which you're operating. This imperative intensifies with the position's scope and level of responsibility. For example, when the role is strategic, as it is for a CEO, president, or business development director, for instance, the time orientation is longer term and more future-oriented than it is when the role is more tactical, as for, say, a production supervisor or operations manager. Our data about the perceived importance of forward-looking as a key leadership characteristic varies by organizational level, with it being almost always considered vital by senior executives, but less so for middle managers. Only about half of frontline supervisors consider it necessary. Less than 50% of college students include this characteristic on their checklist of top 4 admired leadership characteristics. Clearly, those with responsibilities for longer-term projects and results see the increasing value of being able to look further out into the future. You need to consider what you're going to do after the current problem, task, assignment, project, or program is completed. What next should be a question you frequently ask yourself. If you're not thinking about what's happening after the completion of your longest-term project, then you're thinking only as long-term as everyone else is. In other words, you're redundant. The leader's job is to think about the next project, and the one after that, and the one after that. To encourage this perspective, the Human Resources Leadership Team at Modern Terminals Limited, Hong Kong, sets time aside each year to consider not simply, what are we doing right, but more critically, the question, what could we do differently to become an even better human resource team? They encourage everyone to dream big and share their aspirations for the future. Researchers have shown how leaders who focus on the future attract followers more readily, induce more effort and intrinsic motivation from group members, promote group identification, mobilize collective action, and ultimately achieve better performance on measures of both individual and organizational outcomes. The future is where opportunity lies. You must spend time thinking about the future and become better at projecting ahead in time. Whether it's through reading about trends, talking with futurists, listening to podcasts, or watching documentaries, developing a deep understanding of where things are going is a significant part of any leader's job. Your constituents expect it of you. You have to spend more of today thinking more about tomorrow if your future is going to be an improvement over the present. And throughout the process of reflecting on your past, attending to the present, and prospecting for the future, you also need to keep in touch with what moves you, what you care about, where your passion is. Express your passion. Anyone would have great difficulty imagining possibilities when they don't feel passionate about what they're doing. Envisioning the future requires you to connect with your deepest feelings. You have to find something that's so important that you're willing to put in the time, suffer the inevitable setbacks, and make the necessary sacrifices. Without an intense desire, a solemn concern, a consuming question, a grave proposition, a fondest hope, or a cherished dream, you can't ignite the spark necessary to energize aspirations and actions. You have to step back and ask yourself, what is my burning passion? What gets me up in the morning? What's grabbed hold of me and won't let go? Leaders want to do something significant, accomplish something that no one else has yet achieved. What that something is, your sense of meaning and purpose, has to come from within. No one can impose a self-motivating vision on you. That's why, just as we said about values, you must first clarify your vision of the future before you can expect to enlist others in a shared vision. The percentage of direct reports who agree with the statement, "Overall, this person is an effective leader," increases dramatically with the frequency they say that their leader speaks with a genuine conviction about the higher meaning and purpose of our work. Responses from these same leaders, colleagues, and managers yield similar results. People regard most favorably those leaders who regularly talk about the why of work and not just the what of work. Feeling a strong sense of purpose, particularly one that benefits others and not just yourself, has a profound impact on your performance and your health. When organizations convey a strong sense of purpose, there is higher engagement and stronger financial performance than when people feel purpose is lacking. For example, students with a purpose in life rated their coursework as more meaningful than students who didn't have a purpose or had only extrinsic motivations, such as making more money. Furthermore, these students persisted longer when tasks were tedious and consequently achieved more in their courses. In the workplace, people who believe their lives and jobs have meaning feel more connected to others, exhibit greater psychological well-being, are more creative and engaged in their work, and perform better in their jobs than those without a sense of meaning and purpose. Meaning and purpose matter whether you are seeking better grades, persistence in your efforts, greater personal well-being, or improved organizational performance. As a leader, if you want to perform at your best, it's incumbent that you search inside yourself and discover what gives your work and life meaning and purpose. Research by the consulting firm Deloitte confirms that having a strong sense of purpose goes hand in hand with having clear values and beliefs. This is exactly what Andrew Zeppa discovered during his own personal best leadership experience. Andrew had been chair of a committee of trainee solicitors, lawyers, in Manchester, England for about a month when the National Trainee Solicitors Group arranged a conference for all the trainees in the United Kingdom to take place in his city. It was not his event, but given the close affiliation of their local organization with the national group, Andrew decided that he would do all he could to make the conference a success. With 3 weeks to go, the enrollment was only at 75, so Andrew declared to his colleagues that he was going to do everything in his power to ensure that there would be at least 300 attendees. "I spoke passionately about how good it would feel to be there at a packed event and to look around thinking that we had achieved that," Andrew told us, and then he asked the committee members whether they were willing to personally commit themselves to the realization of this goal. Andrew said that because the conference was not one of the committee's goals nor a reason people had joined the committee, he wouldn't have been surprised if the majority had said no. "To my pure joy," Andrew exclaimed, 16 out of the 20 said yes, they were willing to do all they could to make the event a success. And the fact that there were some doubters actually energized everyone involved. "The committee members were more passionate than I had ever seen them before," Andrew said. In the end, after all their work, they succeeded in getting 316 attendees to the conference. Andrew's passion not only fueled his own drive, but also was contagious in getting others to work as hard as they could to realize a future possibility. When you feel your passion, as Andrew did, you know you are on to something very important. Your enthusiasm and drive spread to others. Finding something you strongly believe in is the key to articulating a vision in the first place. Once you're in touch with this inner feeling, you can look and think beyond the constraints of your current position and view the possibilities available in the future. Find a common purpose. Much too often, it is assumed that leaders have the sole responsibility to be the visionaries. After all, if focusing on the future sets leaders apart, it's understandable that there would be this feeling that it's their job to embark alone on a vision quest to discover the future of their organization. However, constituents actually want to hear more than just a leader's vision. While being forward-looking is an expectation of leaders, they aren't supposed to impose only their view of the future on others. People want to see their own ideals and aspirations, their hopes and dreams, incorporated and appreciated. They want to see themselves in the picture of the future that the leader is painting. The central task for leaders is inspiring a shared vision, not selling their personal view of the world. You need to imagine the end result and be able to communicate your vision such that your constituents find a way to achieve their hopes and dreams while achieving that result. What this requires is finding common ground among those people who have to implement the vision. Amit Tolmere, IBM Senior Development Manager, came to appreciate that no leader can dream alone. He realized that achieving his vision could only happen when the team fully owned the dream themselves. People commit themselves fully and deliver their best only if they share the same passion as the leader does, and it's critical that they can picture their own aspirations in the shared vision. Amit learned that people are more likely to commit themselves fully to the greater cause when you listen to them deeply, understand their true calling, and help them achieve their aspirations. People like to be heard and want to have a meaningful impact in their jobs. As a leader, it is very important to find that common higher purpose and appeal to that inner desire of people to create a difference. Nobody likes being told what to do or where to go, no matter how right it might be. People want to be a part of the vision development process. They want to walk alongside their leaders. They want to dream with them, invent with them, and be involved in creating their futures. The experience of Omar Pualawan, head of engineering at R-Vision, gives further testimony to this observation. He recounted how he had created the original business plan for the project, but found my teammates presenting solutions to issues and expanding the vision in ways I never conceived of. We took what we learned, iterated, and tested again many times over. The entire team shared a deep passion and commitment, and our shared vision created a much more spectacular result. My vision was no longer just my own. It had become ours, and the quality of our finished creation reflected this. Don't adopt the view that visions come from the top down. You have to start engaging others in a collective dialogue about the future. You can't mobilize people to travel willingly to places they don't want to go. No matter how grand the dream of an individual visionary, if others don't see in it the possibility of realizing their hopes and desires, they won't follow voluntarily or wholeheartedly. You must show others how they, too, will be served by the long-term vision of the future and how their unmet needs will be satisfied. As Teresa Lai, General Manager of Human Resources for Modern Terminals Limited, explained about their process, "We believe that people will have a stronger sense of purpose and achievement by enlisting in a common vision, which is the key reason why we involve all of our team members in the HR visioning process." Listen deeply to others. By knowing their constituents, listening to them, and taking their advice, leaders give voice to their constituents' feelings. They are able to stand before others and say with assurance, "Here's what I heard you say that you want for yourselves. Here's how enlisting in a common cause will serve your needs and interests." In a sense, leaders hold up a mirror and reflect back to their constituents what they say they most desire. You need to strengthen your ability to hear what is important to others. The outlines of any vision do not appear miraculously to leaders in the isolation of the organization's stratosphere. They come from interactions with employees on the manufacturing floor, in the lab, or in the cafeteria. They originate from conversations with customers in the retail stores. They live in the hallways, in meetings, and even in people's homes. The best leaders are great listeners. They listen carefully to what other people have to say and how they feel. They ask good, and often tough, questions, are open to ideas other than their own, and even lose arguments in support of the common good. Through intense listening, leaders get a sense of what people want, what they value, and what they dream about. This sensitivity to others is no small skill. It is a truly precious human ability. When Melinda Jackson, corporate recruiter for a multinational technology company, realized that cohesion on their new team was lacking, she took it upon herself to schedule regular check-ins with her colleagues, which usually began by asking them many questions about how they were doing, and then, in her words, actively listening. When she learned that